And welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, real people, real solutions, right here. Remember, FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, coming to you live from Hawkins Field out at Vanderbilt University. A big week here for the Vanderbilt Commodores. They'll begin their play for men's basketball coming up tonight against Alabama State. Got a big game coming up this weekend on the football field against Kentucky. A blackout involved on that one as well. So we'll have more information on that a little bit later. And, of course, you can hear all the Vanderbilt basketball and football action on our sister station, 93.3 Classic Hits. So going to be joined by Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, to begin the 7 o'clock hour. Going to be a good day out here at Vanderbilt University. Joe Rexrode, what's going on? How are we doing?
Doing all right. Looking out on Hawkins Field here as the sun rises behind it. Kind of cool.
It is cool. Nice little, a very good scenic view out here. And I will say, this press box, warmer than we usually are in the studio.
It
not
is.
Quite as cold.
This is true. This is true. Got some coffee going. Also, yeah, Vanderbilt men's. Started last night. Vanderbilt women, or no, I'm sorry, tonight. Vanderbilt women last night got a win. So Shea Ralph won her debut 75-59 over Gardner Webb. 23 for Brene Alexander. And Jordan Cambridge, oh no, I'm sorry, 20. I can't read box scores. 20 for Brene Alexander. Five players in double figures. Jordan Cambridge with 10. So good start for them. It's going to be very interesting to see what Shea Ralph does in her first year.
Going to be very interesting to see for sure. What did you make of some college basketball action last night? A big day in the Rex Road household last night.
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on. You know, Belmont has a great game to schedule at Ohio. Loses 92-80, 16 threes for Ohio.
Yeah,
it's tough because that's one of those games where if you can go get that on the road, that's a real nice fat cap when it comes to in case you need an at-large bid. Tennessee last night, not a great first half. Looked like maybe Rick Barnes may have peeled some paint off the walls at halftime, and then they come out and just blow out UT Martin. Kennedy Chandler
looks pretty good.
Yeah, he's going to be awfully good. The freshman point guard, arguably, possibly the best, you know, incoming point guard in the country. Now you got Vescovi just shooting threes, not having to worry about a lot of that stuff. I don't know how they're going to be defensively, but you can see what school record, I think, 17 threes.
Yeah.
So that's going to be they're going to be fun to watch. And then, you know, Champions Classic, tough one for the Cats. Tough one for the Cats, Michelle.
Well, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
So we can't hear Michelle, but I'm imagining right now that she's yelling
to the mic.
I'm just glad she showed up.
Should we leave some quiet time so she can yell?
Yeah, I'm just glad she showed up today after the way I ended the show yesterday. Just trolling Kentucky a little bit. But hey, it's a loss to Duke. It's not like you lost to Gardner Webb or anybody like that. You can rebound from that.
Yeah.
Elijah Campbell, very, very high on the Kentucky Wildcats this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be fine. My household, not happy with Michigan State's loss to Kansas, but they'll be okay. And then, of course, Michigan State gets ranked behind Michigan in the college football playoffs. So, yeah. Double shaking your fist at the clouds in the Rex Road household.
Yeah, there was that. Going back to Tennessee for a second, Wes Rucker, our good friend from GoVols 24/7, dubbed the name Tennis, if I could say this right, Tennis 3 last night. What do you think of that?
Very good. Wes, you know, Wes Rucker, already very good at dad jokes. He might be a little too young to be making all these dad jokes, but about to be a dad, so.
Hey.
You may as well get those dad jokes going, Wes.
Yeah, fire those things up.
Tennis 3.
Tennis 3.
Not Ten-a-three.
Well, I guess Ten-a-three would probably be better.
Because Tennis 3 sounds like tennis.
It does.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Ten-a-three, and I totally butchered it.
Ten-a-three. Okay.
We're going to go with I totally butchered that.
Now I'm going to look it up. I'll see what Wes did. But I like it.
I did think it was a good point by our friend Austin Stanley of A to Z Sports last night. Getting the ball pretty much out of Escovy's hands and him not being the one that has to dribble up the court where he can just spot up and shoot, I think that's probably a pretty good call. Him trying to create offense off the dribble, he can do it. But I kind of like having Vescovi as more of a spot-up shooter than being the one that handles the ball.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. You know, Vescovi as a spot-up shooter is outstanding. He was a good passer. He can still do things with the ball. But to have, it's just like Jordan Bone was the most underrated part of those great teams a few years ago because whenever they need it, they could get in the lane. They were in transition a lot because of how well he pushed it, and that's what you're going to get from Kennedy Chandler, too. Now you get Justin Powell in there hitting some threes last night, too. You know, it's funny because Josiah James, what I think, is 1-for-8. You know, just can't buy one. And obviously, he's got to shoot better this year, but he also completely filled up the box score like he always does. So, yeah, I think they're, you know, no Fulkerson, so he's supposed to be back, I think, against ETSU Sunday. But, you know, I think they're going to be a potentially very good team.
What did you think, and we'll get a little bit more into this later, coming up at about 7:30, what did you think of the college football playoff rankings last night? Obviously, Georgia remains at number one. Alabama at two. I was not totally sure that they would keep Alabama at two after what we saw from Bama against LSU, but I don't know that anyone outside of Georgia was all that impressive last Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard after Georgia to even – what, are you going to put Oregon there? I mean, they didn't look that good either. I mean, no one's looking good. So, I mean, last night, you know, they always try to make it as dramatic as possible. Like last night, the source of their drama was the Michigan State thing because everything else was kind of like, yeah, okay. I mean, since, you know, Ohio State moves up into the four, it helps, you know, Cincinnati moves up a spot with Michigan State falling,
yeah,
and they're going to need more help. But yeah, the Michigan State thing is, you know, I think they do such a bad job of explaining things, and then it's like head to head. We were talking before the show with Josh Foster here at Vanderbilt, you know, head to head. It was last week's explanation for Oregon Ohio State, right? And now head to head doesn't mean anything with Michigan State, and they're talking about metrics and stuff. I mean, but they've been doing this from year one. Basically, whatever happens to happen, they'll frame it and like, no, this is why. I mean, like they don't. There's never been a consistency. I mean, I would argue that you could make that case because Michigan's only loss was at Michigan State. And Michigan State's loss was at Purdue, which is a worse loss. That would be that'd be what I'd say. But you know, regardless, with all that stuff, I think the Big Ten, there's going to be one team that comes out of there unless they really beat each other up, which is possible. If a Michigan or Michigan State beats Ohio State, you know, and then they'd take another loss, which they could all still end up with like two, yeah, and then you'd have opportunity for certainly a Cincinnati. I'm not convinced that Oregon is going to stay unscathed. I mean, it's and I mean, shoot, man, I think Alabama's going to be fine. I'd like to think that we'll have an Alabama-Georgia game that's competitive, but I don't know right now.
Well, I saw this theory floated out there on Twitter last night that the Michigan being ahead of Michigan State was the committee testing the waters for when the season comes to an end and there's a spot available for sliding Notre Dame ahead of Cincinnati, even though the head-to-head's there. What do you think of that?
Man.
Just softening the blow, getting people ready for that Notre Dame sliding ahead of Cincinnati. That'll go well.
I mean, I hadn't even thought about that, and I mean, my coffee tastes worse now to even hear that. They can't do that. I mean, Cincinnati went into their place and won by double figures. What is Notre Dame doing that's even impressive? They're not even
nothing.
They're playing nobody good.
What do they ever do that's impressive?
Well, I mean, some years I have to begrudgingly say that, you know, they do some good things, but God, where'd that come from?
I
what
can't
messed
remember
up website came up with that? Because now I'm starting to like buy it. You know,
I think Nicole Auerbach responded to it last night,
so I
have to go see if I can find it. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Adam in Springfield texting in: when 18 playoffs start, they need to change the name from the college football playoff to the War of the One Losses versus the insert undefeated Cinderella who no one believes in. Adam in Springfield proposing a name change for the college football playoff when expansion comes.
Okay.
I don't hate it.
That's a long name, buddy. But, hey, I hear what you're saying. let me look. So Notre Dame here you know, they won that game at Virginia Tech, which they had no business. But Virginia Tech's not good.
Yeah.
They beat UNC, you know, which just beat Wake Forest. It's fine. But UNC's been massively disappointed. So now they have at Virginia, Georgia Tech at home, and at Stanford. There's nothing on there that would warrant, if Cincinnati doesn't lose a game, there's nothing on there that would warrant them jumping Cincinnati. That would be, ugh.
Ryan Porth texting in says, I'll seriously give up watching college football if they put 11-1 Notre Dame over 13-0 Cincinnati.
They can't justify that. They can't justify that.
I'm with you. I'm just telling you what the Twitterverse said last night. That's what we go by here on the show is the Twitterverse. Yeah. It's a very dangerous game that we play.
Yeah, we do. Twitter roulette.
It is kind of amazing how it does feel like Georgia and everybody else this year. Like, it doesn't really feel like even Alabama, when you watch them, is even that close to Georgia. But it also, in the back of my mind, sets up for a classic Georgia case this year to come in and screw things up at some point.
Yeah, well, no doubt. This is the year. This is the year they put it together. And I still, you know, I don't love their offense against a really good defense, but whose defense would that be?
That's the thing.
I don't know.
They don't have to play themselves.
Exactly. So, yeah, this is – and I'm trying to think of a year where it was like one team and everybody else. I mean, I guess a couple of years ago it kind of was that with LSU. It became that. Like, you didn't feel like
Alabama at least gave them a game. Like, no one's given Georgia a game yet so far except Clemson, which is still kind of amazing to go back and think about how that was close.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Bama, I mean, they scored with them. They just couldn't stop them ever on that day, and that was at Alabama. But you just had, like you just knew Clemson basically didn't have a chance. And that, Tyler, again, that's exactly how it played out. It's the other way now, though. It's the defense, which it's kind of refreshing, actually, to have a team, you know, that is that good defensively in this era of football. But who knows? Maybe the Vol with that offense on Saturday will punch a few holes in that defense.
Maybe so. We're off and running today on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. When we come back, it was a busy day yesterday for the Titans and some transactions, including the loss of what we thought at the time was going to be a pretty impactful free agent. We'll get into more of that. Coming up next, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember, FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Konezvic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And a busy day yesterday, Rex Road, for the Tennessee Titans. A lot of transactions to get into, but we'll start with kind of the most eye-opening one, and that is Josh Reynolds asking for and being granted a release from the Tennessee Titans. Mike Garofalo, I believe, the first one to come out with that report yesterday. So Josh Reynolds is now gone, has not been much of a part of the Titans so far this year anyway on the field, has made a few plays here or there, but also has spent his fair share of time on the inactive list as well. You know, I'm not surprised that Josh Reynolds was frustrated. I think, obviously, this did not work out the way that Josh Reynolds had hoped for. I am a little surprised that he has now been released. What are your thoughts on the Josh Reynolds situation? What was your reaction when you saw that Josh Reynolds was released yesterday?
Well, Garofalo's report said he asked for the release and was granted. So it sounds like, you know, per that report, maybe the Titans would have held on to him as a depth guy in case they needed him. But, I mean, if you got a player disgruntled enough to say, release me and, you know, I'll go ahead and walk and the rest of my salary, hopefully, you know, someone else will pick me up. I mean, I think it makes sense to just move on then. You know, that's not a great depth situation with Cam Batson lost also. I mean, you know, on the practice squad, you've got, well, you got Dez Fitzpatrick, fourth-round pick, and you got Racy McMath, your sixth-round pick. But you don't want to go there. But obviously, you hope you stay healthy. I mean, look, The guy hasn't been able to crack the playing group. Anyone, any Titans fan who was hoping, you know, they'd see some Matt Barkley throwing to Josh Reynolds this year, that's definitely not going to happen because Matt Barkley has been claimed by the Panthers to the active roster. So now the Titans don't have that emergency third guy. But with Reynolds, it'd be
great for Jordan Love.
What's that?
I think they can trade for Jordan Love.
Hey, no, that's your future in Green Bay. You know, I'd be interested to see if Josh Reynolds didn't have any sort of issues health-wise and he had a full spring with the team and he had a full camp with the team, would things have been any different? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. He just didn't seem to really fit. I mean, look, the bottom line is, I mean, it's one of the main running jokes of our show, but, like, you really do have to be physical as a receiver with this team.
Yeah.
And you can be, you know, an Adam Humphries, a Cam Batson, not big, strong guys, you know, and play that role. But especially, I think, if you're an outside receiver, I mean, you need to block.
Yeah.
Now, if you are fast and explosive, and I think the idea was that Josh Reynolds could be – well, when they signed him, the idea was he should be receiver two, unless in the draft they could go high and get someone, right? Then obviously things changed with the Julio Jones trade, but I think the idea was definitely for him to be that vertical presence and give them some of that, because that's what he did with the Rams. I mean, he was pretty darn good as a third receiver for the Rams. Just didn't fit here. I don't know how much the injury was a factor. It had to be some factor. But I'm sure, you know, he can find a spot when you have quote unquote Achilles stuff. I think that's going to pretty clearly affect, how you run. I thought here and there, he looked okay. He had a couple moments, but overall very disappointing.
I mean, the highlight of the Josh Reynolds era for the Titans is going to be the arena football play in Seattle of him just running forward instead of continuing to go in motion. That was quite the play from Josh Reynolds.
That was an interesting, that was very memorable. So, yeah, we'll always have that in Nashville with Josh Reynolds.
It does just, I mean, it feels like he was behind the eight ball from the start with the injuries. You know, obviously one thing that certainly I did not anticipate that I'm sure Josh Reynolds probably did not anticipate as well is the emergence of guys like Chester Rogers and Marcus Johnson and how well they played in training camp. And we talked about it in Vrabel's comments during training camp. Usually when they were talking about Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers, went back to availability. Now, I know that at the end of training camp and the end of the preseason, Marcus Johnson got hurt, but it just kind of felt like Josh Reynolds was behind the eight ball. And to your point, maybe just didn't fit in this offense. I do wonder, you know, what does this mean for Josh Reynolds as he moves forward here? This was, you know, he was basically cost the Titans nothing when they signed him to a contract. And it was the classic, I think, bet on yourself situation.
Yeah.
That did not go very well for Josh Reynolds here with the Titans. I wonder what that means in terms of his future in the NFL. It is funny, as I say that, the first thing that comes up right now on Google about Josh Reynolds is why the Detroit Lions should claim wide receiver Josh Reynolds. What do you think of that?
Hey, there you go. I mean, take all the former Titans receivers. Yeah, I think I still think his track record with the Rams should be helpful to him. And, look, the fact that he was hurt, I mean, he was legitimately hurt here for most of the spring and then a lot of camp. I mean, I think that should help him, actually, as long as he can actually get past that. There were a few times when it looked like he was running well, but I still think that based on what he did there, he's got a chance to stick in the league. Look, you mentioned the Lions. I mean, Khalif Raymond is a key receiver for them. So, again, Khalif Raymond, friend of the show, great story in the league, but if Khalif Raymond is a key receiver in the league, I think Josh Reynolds can find a home somewhere.
I would think so as well. So with Reynolds gone, how do you feel about the depth at wide receiver for this Titans team? Hopefully Julio Jones getting healthier. He did play in the entire game the other day, which I think was a really good sign. You still have Chester Rogers. You have Marcus Johnson. You have our man Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. How do you feel about the depth at wide receiver right now for the Titans?
Yeah, I think you've got a really good five there, and that's the problem for Josh Reynolds is he was the six. But Brown, Jones, you know, Chester Rogers getting back to health now, although Tannehill tried to get him hurt the other night with the
That was the hardest hit I think I've ever seen in my
life.
Oh,
man, that was such a kidney shot. I can't believe he walked away from that okay. But he's back in there. I still think Marcus Johnson, I still think there's more for Marcus Johnson. And then, yeah, Westbrook-Ikhina seems to make a couple key play or two every game and obviously does the special team stuff. I think they're in good shape if the key is can those top two stay out there.
Yep.
And then you sprinkle in some support from the other guys. But I do think if you're down one of those two big guys, a Johnson, a Rogers, a Westbrook-Ikhina, I think they can all come in. We all know it's been well documented. Westbrook-Ikhina can play all over any position. They feel comfortable plugging him in anywhere. So I think they're fine. You know, you have the rookies on the practice squad if need be. And so this is where, how have they been doing? Des Fitzpatrick right now it's been disappointing, but it's very early for him. How has he been doing in developing and trying to become an NFL receiver? And Racy McMath, maybe a little bit oversold in the preseason, but
I would say so.
Physically, absolutely has some attributes that not a lot of guys have. So they may have to go there. They hope not, but if they do, are those guys ready? I don't know. But overall, it's still a pretty good situation.
Still got Mason Kinsey then on the practice squad too.
Well, that's right. I'm just completely forgetting about Mason Kinsey. So
sure,
I apologize.
We'll get a couple of texts about him.
The Mason Kinsey mafia, the Mason mafia. Don't tick them off.
Another move made by the Titans yesterday: Breon Borders released at cornerback. So Breon Borders, a guy that came in last year, made some plays for the Titans defensively when they had some injuries and some struggles at the cornerback position. He came in this year, has made some plays for the Titans as well. Obviously, Breon Borders is not who you want out there on the field in a perfect world, but now Breon Borders is gone. I think Borders has done okay so far with the Titans, but what this tells me is that's probably pretty good news for Christian Fulton, which I think is a welcome sign for Titans fans.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I think that might be what it means. By the way, Racy McMath is technically on the active roster, so I apologize, Racy. It's Dez and Kinsey on the practice squad. I think you could definitely read it that way. It is interesting that those other two guys they picked up, played in front of him.
Yeah.
I mean, well, they brought in Maben, and he immediately played in front of him. And, Chris Jones comes in and plays in front of him. So that was a little bit surprising to see. But, I mean, it probably speaks well of Christian Fulton's chances to return. You also have Breon Body Calhoun, who's on the practice squad. But you could have now, Fulton, I thought last week might be one of those surprise, sneaky, late activations. He wasn't, but he's not far, I don't think. So you bring him back now. And I tell you what, here's where it gets interesting. One, I guess you just feel better about these other guys as depth guys and Breon Borders. I mean, he had a nice run. He had some good moments with this team, and then he had some bad moments with this team.
Yep.
But I think, Chris Jackson, it was one really good game, but it was really good against the Rams. And I wonder, I just feel like he seems to be just better suited and more comfortable on the outside. I do wonder, is it possible Chris Jackson could push Janoris Jenkins? But yep. Regardless, Fulton comes back. Now you have, if he plays like he did early in the season with this pass rush now, that's a really, and with Byard and Hooker now in there and things, and Jayon Brown's in there. I mean, that could be really good for this defense. And then you also do wonder, you at least feel four corners, because Molden, I still think overall is solid. He's given up completions. I think he gave up 6 on 6 targets the other night, but they were all short and he tackled.
Yeah.
And that's what you're really looking for at that spot in those situations.
Do you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Nashville Predators take on the Anaheim Ducks at Bridgestone Arena on Monday, November 22nd? Well, head on over to YouTube, subscribe to the 102.5 The Game YouTube page, and you'll enter for your chance to see the Preds take on the Ducks. Once you subscribe, email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com with your YouTube handle. One winner will be chosen on Monday, November the 15th. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Got more of your thoughts on our text line to get to, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, on Twitter, and YouTube today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, now with two locations in Murfreesboro. Visit their brand new Murfreesboro location at 2019 Memorial Boulevard. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. We are here today live at Hawkins Field in Vanderbilt. A big night tonight. Vanderbilt men's basketball getting underway. They're taking on Alabama State tonight. And a big football game coming up on Saturday for the Doors against the Kentucky Wildcats. A blackout game over here at Vanderbilt. Looking forward to talking to Clark Lee about that and a lot more coming up to begin the 7 o'clock hour here on the program. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, speaking of the text line, our buddy Rick texting in overnight with a text message that's caught your eye. What's going on our text line?
Well, actually, so first of all, I did, as we finished yesterday, Darren, Willie, and Chase started their show with something I did want to get to yesterday, and I don't know, we just didn't. We talked about it actually during some breaks, but it was the, what's the guy's name, Cassius? Who's the?
Yeah, the linebacker.
Cassius
Marsh.
Okay, there you go. Gets the sack, and he gets the taunting penalty for like staring down the, you know, he's staring down the Bears sideline. He had played there, you know, they'd cut him.
Steelers sideline.
All right, sorry, staring down the Steelers sideline. Gets the taunting penalty. That's a huge. That extends. You know, helps the Steelers win the game with the field goal. And it was pretty weak. It was pretty weak. He like bumped the ref. Like when I first saw him, I'm like, wait, did he just flag him for bumping him accidentally? But no, I mean, he had done this whole stare down thing, and of course the taunting stuff is out of hand. So anyway, we didn't. I mean, I don't know what you thought about it. I thought it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But Rick on the text line is he was like happy that those guys talked about it, and there were some shows across ESPN that didn't even have a. I don't know. Didn't even have it on the show today, I guess. I guess they didn't want to address it. Even some shows on Fox didn't address it. That makes it even more suspicious. So I don't know. It wasn't necessarily a shot at us, but maybe just that there's this wider conspiracy about no one talking about the that penalty. But now we have. So there we go. We have talked about it. It was bad. I mean, I just, in all seriousness, taunting. I understand it. Like, Vrabel is a huge proponent of this thing. And I understand the distinction between go celebrate. Anytime there's a turnover down the NFL, right, the whole team goes in the end zone and falls all over each other, and it's fine. Touchdown dance is fine. I'm glad. I'm glad all that stuff is okay. I get the let's take away the in-your-face stuff, you know, having to show someone up after a play, I think it's. I think it gets out of hand sometimes, and I think that can sometimes lead to altercations. So that's fine. But what he did was seriously, like, kind of look at the sideline for a few seconds and like flex on him. But I mean, he wasn't close to any other player. I mean, if that one is going to count as a taunting, and especially at that point in a game. You know, like at that point in the game, that is outrageous. It really is.
I don't understand any of it. I really don't. I mean, I'm trying to think back the last 10, 15 years. Like, do you just recall taunting being some big issue in the league where all of a sudden all these just fist fights are getting started on the field by people wearing helmets where people are just taunting all the time? Like, I don't remember this being some big problem in the NFL. And to me, it is hilarious to me that you can get a flag thrown on you for taunting, for looking at a sideline, or for saying something very quickly to an opposing member. But every time there's an incomplete pass in any NFL game across the entire country, whether the defensive back has anything to do with it or not, they're getting up and waving their hands with an incomplete sign in somebody's face, and that's not taunting. There's no difference. You're trying to talk your crap doing that, waving incomplete in the receiver's face, whether you had nothing to do with it or anything to do with it or not. That's taunting, and yet no flag ever gets thrown on that. But all of a sudden, if you look in the wrong direction of a player in the NFL nowadays, it's taunting. The whole thing makes no sense. They need to get rid of it.
Yeah, well, I think that just the ones where it really is in your face, I don't know. You're right. I don't think it's like it happens a ton that it actually leads to like a big brawl.
Right.
I mean, but like the A.J. Brown, Jalen Ramsey stuff the other night, I mean, some of that stuff is – I think it's probably worth trying to clean up.
But I think the A.J. Brown, Jalen Ramsey stuff the other night probably gets called for taunting last year or the year before because they're literally in each other's face and yelling at each other.
Yeah.
And you had to go physically separate them. Like, to me, I'm fine with that being called taunting or unsport, whatever you want to call it. But just looking at somebody and saying something, I think it's weak. It really is.
Yeah, they certainly need to they need to refine it, and they need to clarify stuff, and they need to make it more lenient. Is what they I mean. Yeah. Like it's overboard. And it's one of those things where, like early, sometimes you see a rule put in something like this, and it's really enforced really closely early, and then you sort of. But I mean, we're well into the season, and that stupid thing just happened. So yeah, they've certainly got to revisit it.
I can already envision. So, like an NFC title game or AFC championship game or, God forbid, a Super Bowl coming down to somebody getting flagged for taunting. That'll go over well. Yeah. I would hope like there would be some judgment used by the officials in those type situations of it's an emotional game anyway, and it's probably – I mean, look, we watch a lot of sports. Basketball can be emotional, hockey, baseball. There's emotional moments in every sport. It's every play in football because of the violent nature of it. So – there's that to take into account anyway. I hope once the time the playoffs come around that there can be a little bit more common sense used of these guys just can't be robots out there and play the way they need to play to survive in this league.
Yeah. I hear you. I mean, for the most part, I don't know. It's not like I've watched every single taunting call. I get the sentiment behind it, and especially, I mean, Vrabel is one of the people who I think has described it well. There is also the, being models for kids and how they behave at yet lower levels and things like that. So, sure. And celebrating with your teammates, that's hey, look, I mean, I've had this discussion with my kids, when they've gotten emotional in games, like, go to your teammates and congratulate them. You don't need to say anything to the other team. I mean, this is like a lifelong challenge, especially like you said, when it gets emotional. So like I think that there's some validity to the idea, but yeah, it's a mess in terms of what they're, the guidelines that clearly aren't strictly defined enough.
I gotta say, I was not that upset that it hurt the Chicago Bears the other night.
Yeah, so you're actually, in the end, you're okay with it.
Yeah, in the end, I'm cool with it. But I have seen a lot of, Matt Nagy's going to get fired for that because they're going to end up with too many losses at the end of the year. I was like, yeah, well, that was probably going to happen anyway. I don't know if y'all have been watching the Bears lately, but they're not very good.
Yeah, I think Matt Nagy is already what's the hot seat? What are the hot seat rankings right now?
I mean, that division's got a couple of good contenders. I mean, Mike Zimmer, he's probably not going to make it through the end of the year, would be my guess. I mean, it's Joe Judge. He's probably on the hot seat, I would assume.
What year is it for Joe Judge?
Like two or three, but that's enough up there in New York, right?
Yeah, I suppose. Is that it? What about, I mean, I guess Big Vic in Denver is kind of, trying. He's fighting.
They're going to give David Culley more than 1 year down there in Houston with nobody on his team?
Oh, gosh.
No players?
That you can't judge anything that he's doing, right? I know he had that one weird thing where he, declined the penalty. That was not ideal.
Yeah.
I mean,
Urban, with his win the other day, he's probably going to get a lifetime contract, right? He's probably just looking for that new deal down there in Jacksonville. Go celebrate in Ohio?
Is there somebody we're forgetting?
Well, I'm sure there is. I'm trying to go through every team in the league. But, I mean, the North, with Nagy and Zimmer is going to get fired. Like,
yeah, those have got to be your top two, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Hey?
So, yeah, interesting. I guess it's really not. There's just a lot of younger coaches. I mean, there's been some disappointing. Obviously, Miami, very disappointing. But, I mean, yeah. You can't. I mean, you know, he was like the toast of the league a year ago. Flores was, you know.
He was.
Interesting.
It is interesting. We'll take your thoughts. Continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Got a couple Titans thoughts to get into next, including an interesting question from Joseph on the text line. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We could go get Darren Fells. Nope. He's ending up with Terrific Tom, the Pharaoh, down there in Tampa Bay.
So who's hurt? Ends. Who's
Gronk.
Hurt down
Gronk's
there?
Gronk's been out.
Yeah, it's still Gronk. Yeah.
I don't know if Gronk's coming back this week or not. But
yeah, interesting.
Doesn't sound like it.
Well, John Robinson, sorry, didn't sign Darren Fells. His former boss signed him instead.
Yeah, 4 catches, 43 yards so far this year. Can't wait to see him win Super Bowl MVP with Brady on there. It's going to be great. Our buddy Bob on Twitter says, I see they somehow didn't release Darrington Evans. Was that a misprint? Is coming from Bob. Bob is he is done with Darrington Evans.
Yeah, I tweeted back at him like he, you know, it's his second season. He's a third-round pick. I mean, no one would argue like things have gone great with Darrington Evans, and there's a lot of reason to wonder if he's going to be able to, you know, play in the NFL and be healthy. But and then Bob responded to me with bust. He may end up that way, but you certainly do not give up on him now as a third round pick with, again, even I understand that, like, what fans see on the game on Sundays, it's been very limited. You saw a little bit last year, but you know, the team obviously sees the guy every day in the facility, sees him on the practice field. He's got a lot of ability and talent. Certainly big concern that he can't stay healthy, but no, you do not cut him right now.
You don't cut him.
No, you
look,
don't.
There's no harm in Darrington Evans coming back to training camp next year and seeing if he can give this thing a go and if he can stay healthy. Now, I will say this. If he gets hurt in training camp again next year and into the preseason, at some point, you just got to cut bait. Like, you can't go through this every year.
I think a third time, yeah.
But there's no point in cutting him right now. Like,
no.
Them bringing Darrington Evans back next year for training camp is not going to negatively affect their cap situation or their bottom line or anything like that. So, you know, I understand the frustration. I really do with Darrington Evans. It would be, at this moment, great to have Darrington Evans when you lose a guy like Derrick Henry. That would have been really nice to have him in the fold. But certainly, I don't think there's any harm bringing him back. I will say, though, if this continues to be a story, I don't think the leash is going to be that long with Darrington Evans next year.
Right. I mean, if there's another injury, either a recurrence of either of these, which he had a hamstring, then he had a knee this year, or something else, then at some point you got to, I mean, you have to move on. And you have to be prepared to move on anyway. But this is also, again, very talented guy who it could also be one of those things where all of a sudden he gets healthy somewhere else and you're watching him make plays. I'd say it's next year. Then next year or bust, yeah. You know, would be probably the way to look at it with him.
Our buddy Liam on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The NFL should give out compensatory picks based on how few games your draft picks play. What do you think of that? Titans would have a whole lot of picks right now.
Man.
Between Isaiah Wilson and Darrington Evans and Caleb Farley, you'd get a few picks.
They'd be rolling in picks, yeah. But probably, yeah, you probably don't want to reward that.
Slick on the text line. Evans is good on Madden, if that's any consolation. Joe, is that any consolation to you?
No, but it's good to know. I mean, Madden has its finger on the pulse of actual football,
it
right?
Does. So, I got a text that says, so glad that we've got Vrabel. I have to admit I wasn't a fan when we first hired him. Very happy that I was wrong. I think a lot of Titans fans very happy with Mike Vrabel and the job he's done thus far. And it was an interesting discussion that we had briefly yesterday, like, regardless of the way this season ends, even if this is a first-round playoff exit, has Mike Vrabel done enough to warrant a contract extension? I say yes. I think he has. And I think odds are you're probably going to see that before next season begins. You'll see a contract extension for Mike Vrabel. Just a guess.
Yeah, it's interesting going back to the higher one, the whole I remember columns I wrote, like, how does a guy win a playoff game and then get fired?
Yeah.
And in favor of a guy who has never been a head coach, has been a coordinator for 1 year, and it went poorly. It was a huge gamble, or at least that's how I thought it looked. And I think there was a lot of reason to question and wonder. But I mean, really, if you go from the start till now, obviously some hiccups. Nothing's been perfect overall. I mean, it's like John Robinson's tenure. Some recent, especially draft picks that are troubling and could really hurt down the road. But overall, it's been, I'd say, very good. I think very good is maybe a little bit understating it, but I think that's certainly safe to say that. So, I think locking him up would be the thing to do.
Joseph on the text line, do y'all think that we'll be moving on from Taylor Lewan after the season? I'm 100% for the boys, but we're going to have to pay some of these defensive players that we have.
I think it's very possible. I mean, the whole question there is just then what – and this is where that discussion gets into what you've tried to do to draft and bring in new blood to the offensive line, and it hasn't worked out. I mean, Dylan Radins, it's too early to give up on him, but right now he's a backup guard – was brought in to be the right tackle, isn't the right tackle. There's a backup guard who gets immediately surpassed by Aaron Brewer when he's activated. But he's got to be, I think, one of the answers moving forward. You know, Quessenberry has been a great story at right tackle.
Number one tackle, Pro Football Focus.
That's right. So far this year. What is more important than Pro Football Focus's grades? But Ben Jones, moving on soon. He's up there, and you can't think long term with him. Roger Saffold has been a really good player for this team when he's healthy. He struggled to stay healthy. I mean, the whole offensive line, I think you've got to have reinforcements there. If you cut Lewan, that's a big savings for sure. I don't have it in front of me, but I want to say it's $11 million. Well, the dead money this year had they cut him was like 15, and it's down to very little.
Yep.
So it's on the table. But, again, if that's what you're going to do, who's your left tackle? Where are you getting a left tackle? Are you getting a good enough left tackle? I mean, can you feel good about drafting one and just plugging in? Is there a free agent out there that you can sign for, half price of what you're paying Lewan? And if that's the case, what kind of performance do you get? I will say that if Lewan can't get healthy and stay on the field and play well at some point here pretty soon, then I think it gets more and more likely that that happens. I don't know how it wouldn't.
Well, and beyond that, and I agree with you, but beyond that, you're going to have to save money somewhere next year, whether that's letting Harold Landry go, whether that's cutting Taylor Lewan. I mean, there are going to have to be some difficult decisions that get made. Again, we'll have plenty of time to discuss next year and this offseason coming up, but – it just does. It highlights the importance of this start for the Titans. You're 7-2. You've lost your best player, but you're still in really good shape in the AFC South. Still right now in really good shape in the AFC as a whole. This is as go for it of a year as you could have if you're John Robinson and the Titans. So just knowing that regardless of whether Lewan comes back in and plays well, there are going to be some tough decisions that you're going to have to make this offseason. So, I mean, that's something you're going to have to keep an eye on. The money's going to have to be taken out of the equation somewhere. I just don't know at this moment where exactly that's going to be.
Right, and as we mentioned yesterday, big thing to keep in mind is the $27 million jump in cap hit that Ryan Tannehill is about to make. To 38-6 next year. That really is like adding two high price free agents to your roster. So you have to make moves elsewhere to compensate.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee, as we do every Wednesday morning at 7 o'clock, with us in person this time. So that's good news for us. Probably scary news for him, but we'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.